Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us today as we take a look at native plants that bring late summer and early fall color and interest to your garden. Susan Carpenter back with us. She's the outreach senior outreach specialist and native plant gardener at the UW-Madison Arboretum. We'll talk about native plant gardening and find out what's been going on at the Arboretum, and I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Susan Carpenter, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, great to be here, Larry.
So let's take a look at the Arboretum for a minute. What plants are looking particularly nice in the native garden at the Arboretum?
Well, it's been a wonderful summer this summer, and we've got right now we've got the kind of things in peak bloom would be our liatris or blazing stars. We have several different types of blazing star. Those are gorgeous flowers, and the monarchs are visiting one of those species in particular. We've got still a lot of like yellow flowers blooming, some of our cup plants compass plants and prairie dock are still in bloom, and we're just starting to see the beginnings of the goldenrods and the earliest asters blooming. So it's really a good time. It's been the grasses are in bloom, so we've got those kind of small but very but in some cases very tall flowers blooming now. So it's a spectacular time to be out. And today is a gorgeous day, and we've had a lot of gorgeous days to do our gardening and do our monitoring and observations as well.
So speaking of being out and doing a little work in the garden, what kinds of maintenance do native gardens need in the fall?
Well, in the fall, we usually leave the plants standing over, you know, for the winter, and that's because there's plenty of seeds that are still being used by animals and birds. There's seeds that are still falling to continue, you know, propagating the plants themselves. And it's just helpful also when I get a lot of snow in the garden to know for people to see that there's a garden bed there, and they usually don't walk right through it. So we've got a lot of pathways that people can take. Even when there's snow on the ground, they can notice that. But at this time of year, we're actually still doing weeding and looking and also checking for places where we might want to make some changes for next year or an area that we rework a little bit. We're looking at some of our more aggressive native plants, like our Canada goldenrod, and reducing its impact in some areas by taking it off. And usually we find at this time of year, it's starting to bloom, but it's already established the underground stems for next year underground. So if we can remove some of those along with the plant, then we're able to keep the plants that are growing around it a little with a little more light and a little more energy to grow.
You know, it's been a dry summer in many parts of the state, but doesn't sound like that's been much of a concern for the Arboretum.
No, we've been, I think the Madison area is pretty much at the average amount, a cumulative average amount of precipitation for this time of year. Like last year was very dry in our area at this point, but the other thing about the native plants is that drought, a little bit of drought, and even a moderate drought does not really affect them very much. They may bloom a little bit less, or they may be a little bit shorter if there's a sustained drought throughout the season. But we've got a lot of large plants, a lot of flowers this year, and it's a pretty, I think moisture-wise, it's been pretty normal, adequate moisture at adequate times.
You know, I have a sort of a little native plant garden that runs between the sidewalk and the street in front of my house. And the one thing I've noticed now, the coneflowers have lost their luster, and I have not planted plants that will be blooming when those are sort of dying out.
Mm-hmm.
What do you recommend for, and it's a shady spot.
Yeah, so for a shady spot like that, you might, and you probably want to keep it kind of short in that case, so, you know, for visibility and just for care. So some of the things that grow that might be nice to grow that would bloom at this time of year in the shade would be the zigzag goldenrod and the, like, a Shorts aster. That's Shorts as it's named after someone, not necessarily diminutive, but those are both ones that can do very well in the shade, and they can bloom. You know, they'll be blooming at this time of year, actually a little bit later than now. So they're both good choices. The Shorts aster gets a little bit taller than maybe up to 2.5 or so, 3 feet tall, but it's not very thick. You know, it's not a very bushy plant, so it's, and it'll seed itself around. Another choice you might have, just to have, I don't know whether you have any grasses there, but a nice grass-like plant for the shade, a shady spot like that, might be the Sprengel's sedge. And not that it would be blooming at this time of year. It actually blooms quite early in the way that sedges do, which is not to say very conspicuous flowers. But it has a nice bushy bushy appearance, and it's about a foot tall, but it gives you kind of a grass-like appearance, but it grows in the shade. So that might be a choice, too, to add in.
Ah, very, very good suggestions. And the other thing I've got to do is a bit of weeding, I noticed, as I was looking at them.
Yes. You, especially with a young garden that you're just starting out, there's always a little bit of open space and a little bit of weeding. But over time, you basically are just going to continue to check it. And at some point, you'll see, well, maybe I want to edit the native plants here a little bit, or, you know, something's getting a little bit too common in your area. Then you want to add some other things. But, you know, you can just make an opening for it and then, you know, put some new things in. But in your situation, you probably just want to watch for shade tolerance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I was to sell my house, which I don't plan to do, by the way, I think I would sell it about within the first couple weeks of July.
Ah, yes.
Because the
flower, when it's really beautiful.
Oh, it's really, really nice that time of the year. Well, listen, enough about me. Let's hear what's on your mind. Give us a call with your questions as we talk native plants. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or go ahead and email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jeff in La Crosse online. Let's go there. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I'm calling to find out for an alternative to a recommendation that a landscaper gave me. I have a strip of lawn property alongside my house between the alley and the house on the west side. He had suggested barberries along with rose bushes, and I found out the barberry is not native, and I was wondering if there might be a good alternative.
Does the area get a lot of sun
it's
part of the day?
On the west side, yeah, it's on the west side of the house, and then on the other side of the alley is a parking lot, so...
Right, so it's pretty warm there.
Warm.
Yeah, and you're interested in, and how wide is it?
The whole width of the strip there is probably 8-10 feet, and the bushes we were going to plant about maybe every 3 feet or so, and give them enough room to spread out, and then off the alley, and still. The idea is to provide some sort of barrier so we don't have people running through the yard there.
Yeah. Right. Well, you could. There are some nice native shrubs that you could try there, and you could even put in, instead of putting all the same, you know, shrub like all the way down, you could put a mixture of things. So since it's a kind of hemmed in area, you might not be too concerned with. You might be willing to use plants that do sucker or, you know, spread themselves like with underground stems, you know, kind of fill it in. So some possibilities, and you can look up, I'll give you some possibilities, and then you could look up to see like the shape of the plant and how much full sun it can take. But I've got these growing in full sun, and they do very well to make kind of a border type of situation, which it sort of sounds like you're talking about. The American hazelnut would be one choice, and that also has hazelnuts if you can beat the chipmunks, two of them, and that are edible. You could also try, let's see, I wouldn't go with American plum, because although it's a gorgeous shrub, it will get a little too big and maybe stick out too much in, you know, stick out too much on the sides. So I'm trying to think of ones that would kind of stay in that smaller, you know, in that smaller size range. Probably you could try something smaller, like if you have some areas that you wanted maybe only 2 feet tall or a foot tall, you could try like New Jersey tea. You could try a lead plant if it gets a lot of sun, like if it gets more than 6 hours a day and there's a spot there. So I'm just suggesting kind of a combination of smaller and larger, and the larger shrub would be the hazelnut to fill in that area.
So you might have a hazelnut and then maybe some of the New Jersey tea and then maybe another
smaller
hazelnut or whatever.
Yeah, but or put the hazelnuts like at either end or at the places where they won't shade those smaller ones. Just kind of a variety, though, might be worth trying. And the good news about a variety is that if you plant three different things and two of them don't make it on that site, you won't do the expensive experiment of planting a bunch of them and finding that out later. And then you can fill in with the things that do better, you know, that do well.
Jeff, good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Thank you so much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Aubrey Ralph, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at late summer in the native garden today with our guest, Susan Carpenter, the outreach specialist and native plant gardener at UW-Madison Arboretum. Questions for her? I hope you'll join in. What native plants do you enjoy in fall and winter? What questions do you have about care? Are you confused about what seeds to plant now? Those are all good questions. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Just a little sidetrack here. Last week on the show, on Garden Talk, talked about one of my favorite zucchini recipes, and it's called Zubeefy. And some listeners have asked for that recipe. So I posted it for you in our blog, and just go to wpr.org/Larry. And in the right-hand side column, you'll see the recipe under a photo of some zucchini. And I hope you enjoy it. Zubeefy. Yeah, if you like cheese and maybe hamburger and a lot of cheese, including cottage cheese, you'll probably like this recipe. Zubeefy. All right. Susan Myron emailed that the milkweed in his garden is spreading everywhere, and he wonders if cutting them down before the seed pods open will help control them. And they can kind of take over an area.
Probably he's referring to the common milkweed, which is rather tall, and if you never plant it, you probably will have it coming into the garden.
Right.
We do here. We generally are promoting it because, even though we have a lot of it, but we still promote it because of its role in supporting monarch populations and there are other milkweed insects as well. if you're trying to control it, you can, I mean, cutting it off still leaves the underground network of stems. First of all, I would wait until the monarchs are done. We've seen a few monarchs still laying eggs on milkweed this week. So, and we're really hoping that people will keep their milkweeds going so that the caterpillars will be able to mature into the butterflies that will then be migrating from now on down to Mexico for the winter. But if you are in a situation where you are controlling it like a little bit later than this, maybe in a few weeks after the caterpillars have developed, you can pull it, and you still won't get all the rhizomes out, but you will set it back definitely. And if you don't want it to spread seeds, because it does spread by both underground stems and by seed out of those pods, then you can just harvest the pods off, or better yet, you could offer the pods to people who would come to harvest them when they're ripe and ready to get the seeds out, and who are propagating milkweed, for larger areas or for their own gardens, et cetera. So probably like the Wild Ones chapter might be a place where there might be some people that would be interested in collecting those milkweed seeds from your milkweed before you take it down. There. You can control it to some extent, but it's always, it's always kind of a friendly presence, and it can pop up where where you didn't have any before just because a new seed got in there.
It always surprises me where they'll pop up.
Yep.
It's kind of fun. Oh, man. Megan in Black Creek, we'll go to you now. Hi, Megan. Thank you for calling. Megan, are you there? I guess we lost Megan. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi there. Sorry about that. I am actually looking for a climber rose or like a rambling rose to cover a cattle panel fence that we put up to keep our dog inside of our property off of a county road. And I was just wondering if there's any native roses or climbers that I can look for, or I guess any sort of bush type variety to make it look pretty.
Okay, well, I can't think of any like actual like vining type of rose, that would really be a climber that's a native rose. Most of our native roses, they definitely spread, but they don't necessarily like climb as a vine type of plant. There are some other things that might work well, though. For example, there's a native clematis that might be appropriate. It's a vine that comes up from the ground and comes up from its old stems a bit every year, but it does climb well and might, it doesn't, is the fence very tall?
It's, 5-6 feet,
yeah.
Not very tall
okay.
at all. And
yeah,
so I was thinking I would have to train it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this vine doesn't, it likes to spread kind of out over things, so it doesn't like have a lot of it's not heading for the sky, let me put it that way. But it is heading for light, and it has beautiful beautiful white flowers on it, and so that's one idea. You might want to try some things to see, because I don't know how much you want it to spread beyond the fence itself, or if you just want it kept on the fence. And some of these might want to keep spreading like across the fence and then down the other side and then on their way. But so that's a possibility of a native that would work. I mean, there are other native vines that would be possible. There's a native honeysuckle vine that you would have to train. It does twine around things, so you kind of train it along the fence, perhaps.
Okay.
And that might be a good possibility too. It's a yellow flowers that bloom earlier in the summer than now, but I was just working with one earlier today, and that might be a good possibility too. A native honeysuckle vine.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Megan. Appreciate your call. Well, let's see. Myron in Montello. We'll give you a chance now. Hi, Myron.
Hello. Good morning. This has puzzled me for some years now. I got a milkweed question. I live in Marquette County now, and I'm on the bank of a creek, and the milkweeds are invading my lawn, and I'm leaving them go to help the monarchs, but they don't develop a pod. What's wrong?
So do they bloom?
No.
Okay. Are they? Do you know what kind of milkweed they are? They're the ones with the really broad leaves, or are they more narrow leaves?
I don't know. I'll tell you my history. I grew up. Our farm bordered Lake Michigan in Racine County. We had a quarter mile of lakefront, and it was full of milkweeds. Mm-hmm. And back during the war, school kids gathered them for the war effort, and I filled up about five, with the help of my aunt, I filled up about five 50-pound cabbage sacks with milkweed pods.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Those would be the common milkweed, I think.
Yes, that is the common milkweed. the milkweeds that are just the, you know, if they're moving out into the lawn, you know, if they're coming from another, if they're moving from underground stems from another established patch of milkweed, the youngest ones that come out first are not necessarily going to have flowers on them. They just have to get bigger. Most of the time, it seems like they get big enough to have a flower head, you know, flower heads on them even that first year, but they might not be big enough. If they've gotten mowed, you know, earlier in the season and now they're coming back from that, they also wouldn't be, you know, if they're young at this time of year, they wouldn't be blooming because their blooming time has already passed. Another thing that might happen is you did see flowers, but not very many. It could be that it's a shady, you know, a shadier spot. Now, I don't know what your, you know, how shady your spot is, but in the shade, they will also tend not to bloom as readily as if they're in full sun. That's just about that species. And the only other thing that could happen if you saw flowers but you didn't find any pods, it could be that it was, say, in the shade or that it wasn't adequately pollinated, maybe at the time that it was blooming over a short period of time there were no bumblebees there to pollinate it or no large pollinators there to pollinate it, and then you wouldn't find any pods later. But it sounds like you've got a lot of experience with milkweed and milkweed pods, so hopefully one of those explanations makes sense for your situation.
Yeah. Is that common milkweed, is that a native, or is it?
It is, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, we have. I know. Sometimes it seems like if there's so much of something in the garden setting in this case, I mean, I guess you can, you know, you can never say there's too much milkweed for the monarchs, but in a garden setting, sometimes, you know, is 100 enough? Is, you know, 60 enough in a small area? I get it. If there's a lot. But it is a native, and there's actually other milkweed species that are available for planting in gardens. So depending on what kind of garden you have, sunny, shadier, moist, dry, there's really a milkweed for every situation. So you can look into the other native species of milkweed, and Wisconsin has 12 of them. So,
yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. David in Lincoln County, your turn now. Hi, David.
Yes, I'm trying to find a native plant that can be used over a septic field. So it should have short roots. This would be zone 4. That's current zone 4. It used to be zone 3. And it's going to be a shadier area. So I'm wondering what might work there.
Yeah, you've got to go with something really short for that. I wonder if, is it semi-shaded or very shaded? You know, is it kind of light shade or is it very, very deep shade?
Possibly light. In time, I might be able to get a little bit more sunlight in it as it's logged, but at the moment, mm-hmm. No.
Okay. Yeah. So that's a tricky thing too. If it's shady enough that you could plant, you know, that some of the more like the wildflowers could be planted there, then that would be an option. Another, And again, zone four, I'm not as familiar with as zone five, but another possibility on septic, semi-shaded on septic, could be like a sedge, a very small sedge, like Pennsylvania sedge, and that one does grow up north, so that would be a possibility because it's not deeply rooted, but it will cover, you know, it can provide a ground cover. It does take a while for it to spread and get started. You might also look into the native plant nurseries and see there are probably some seed mixes that are designed for that purpose, and a good native plant nursery could, you know, let you know if they have some designed mixes that would be working for that. Because, yeah, a lot of native plants have deeper roots, and so you want to avoid that for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I think Big Blue Stem has been something that's been recommended for septic fields.
It has a very deep root system, and it won't go in shade, but... I'm trying to think of the root systems that are not very deep. You know, I mean, some of the native plants have shallower root systems, and those are usually the smaller plants.
Yeah. I have it in the back of my head that deep rooted was okay for a septic field, but maybe I...
Well, you can't have trees or woody plants. I do know that. That's a concern, but, I think it would be good to check with a native plant nursery on that one to see if they have a mix, because then you just kind of get a lot of things that would probably work in your situation.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Mm-hmm. Lois in Chippewa Falls, on to you now. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I was at a friend's place yesterday, and she showed me her milkweed that looked like someone sprayed it with black dust. I mean, I've never seen this before. The whole milkweed, the pod, everything was turning black, and it wasn't dying. So do you have any ideas?
Well, did it look like a mold or something like that?
Well, it's possible, but nothing around it. None of the other plants around it had anything like it, and the plant looked healthy. I mean, the leaves looked like they were, you know, they weren't suffering or anything. But
yeah, that sounds interesting. I mean, there are sometimes you see that, like, a certain plant is just susceptible to, you know, something, or it happens by chance that it gets, you know, something gets onto it, and you look around and other plants of the same kind even don't have it. Milkweed has a pretty, the common milkweed has a pretty, it's pretty stiff leaves and pretty strong stems, lots of fibers in the stems. So it could be affected by something on the surface, like that just got started growing on there, that really wouldn't harm the plant very much. I mean, it doesn't look good, or it's cosmetically not appealing, but it might not affect the plant. And the way, you know, at this time of year, if she is curious about that, she could wait and see if the seed pods develop normally and the seeds develop normally. In that case, I would say it was just some kind of, you know, surface, like a fungus or something like that, that got growing on the side. One thing she could do is send a picture of it to the plant diagnostic lab, email a picture of it to the plant diagnostic lab here in Madison, and they might be able to identify it from the picture.
Yeah, I think so. The Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, PDDC.
Right.
If she can shoot a picture over there, they can probably come up with an answer for that, Lois. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Mike emailed, just wondering if this is a good time to plant, as we go into the fall season, plant trees or transplant saplings.
It can be, as long as we have weather that's not, the day that you choose to do it is not too hot, you might, make sure everything's prepared, like your new holes are prepared before you dig the small specimens that you're moving. You want to make sure you water them very well and keep track of the watering. If we get into a dry period of the fall, you'd want to keep giving it about, you know, like an the equivalent of like an inch of rain per week. And then the fall is a really good time for roots to be established. So the soil is going to stay warmer, you know, as the air temperatures drop. We kind of feel colder, but the soil is still relatively warm for, you know, longer into the fall. So that's a good time for roots to be establishing. So, yeah, as long as you keep keep an eye on that, you know, in case we get into a dry fall, the moisture, you should be successful with that.
Yep, I certainly agree with that. Lisa in Amberg, it's your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have purple coneflowers in my garden, and they have developed the strangest flowers. I think maybe it's a viral infection. Mm-hmm. They have sprouted little tiny flowers in a rosette around the top of mm-hmm. the flower. Mm-hmm. And what do I need to pull them out and plant something else, or I'm not sure what to do with them.
Yeah, this is another case, and I have just seen that in the last few days, one example of that, not here in the garden, though. And so I would, again, that would be another case of sending a picture to the plant diagnostic, the disease center, and gaining their advice on that, because it would be hard without looking at it to see, you know, they will know what it looks like. And then the advice may be to either remove those plants or to, you know, cut those off and get rid of them, depending on what they determine it to be.
Yeah, and they're pretty quick about responding on mm-hmm. things like that. If you have a photo, a couple of photos you can send to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. If you just type in UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, it'll pop up. And I think that's really good advice with that, Lisa. Good luck. Thank you. Diane in Darlington, on to you now. Hi, Diane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was listening to you guys talk about the septic field, and I have a grouping of native sumac growing on top. I did not know that woody plants were supposed to be growing over there. I kept them because I thought they were really good bluebird food, another native food. So how do I get rid of that?
Well, it could be that the sumac is actually is not a deep-rooted plant. What I would, if I were you, I'd get advice as to whether you need to remove that or whether the root system of the sumac is a colonizing species. So if you have one sumac, then soon you have the small trees around it, and then it continues to grow into what we call a clone. But that happens by very, very shallow roots. Whether or not it's going to go downward and harm anything, you know, in your septic, I'm not sure. So I would get advice from your septic, you know, from a septic expert about whether that plant is a problem. And if you're going to get rid of it, the best, if it's a relatively small area, which it probably is, a good way to do that, or the best way to do it that I know of, would just be to repeatedly cut it. And you could treat it with, spot treat the stem with an herbicide, you know, to stop it. But it's going to keep on trying to colonize. So mowing, you know, once it's down small, mowing it, those would be some techniques. And when you cut it, you want to cut it in like this time of year, not waiting until winter. It seems like winter would be a good time to cut it. But in the winter, actually, if you cut it, then it stimulates it. So better to cut it when it's more actively growing now. It is a it does provide seeds and fruits for the birds in the winter, but there are there are probably other species you could grow in your property that would also help with that too. Maybe you could substitute some gray dogwood, not on the septic, but you know, elsewhere in the yard to or in the property to attract and support bird population.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Ty emailed they're transplanting native trees from various locations on their property in northern Wisconsin to other locations on their property. Any tips and tricks? I think good time to transplant, as you say, probably now is a good time.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, one thing about doing it now, if you've got you've got the soil The soil is workable, of course, and it will be workable, you know, for another couple of months. But you want to get a little, you want to give them a little time to establish before the freezing temperatures come about. So that's why I mentioned the previous caller to have, a little bit of time for those roots to establish in the fall. If you do it in the spring, then you have the frozen soil, and the plants might begin, you know, you want to do it when they're either going into dormancy or when they're dormant, and you might not have time in the spring. Another thing to mention with the transplanting is that if you're transplanting things around and you wonder whether they're going to be safe, it might be a good idea to use some fencing just to help you remember where they are and to keep like deer and other critters from damaging them when they're, you know, when they're in a, when they're just in their establishment stage.
Judy in New Glarus called to recommend for the caller who wanted a climbing vine. She wanted to recommend prairie rose. She says hers does really well on a trellis.
Okay, that's a great idea. I didn't know it could go in on a trellis, but that would be perfect.
Yeah, prairie rose. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Sue in Onalaska. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have started some hibiscus paper plate flower plants in the ground in my yard. And they have not flowered this year, of course, because they're still growing. They were grown from a seed. Mm-hmm. So they're quite short yet. I was wondering how to winterize them.
I'm not very familiar with that. So you're going to leave your their plants? Are they tender? They won't make it through the winter, or
I'm not sure. And I didn't know. I didn't know if I had to, you know, cover them, mulch them. I didn't know what I'd have to do with them. Because, like I said, they're just little sticklings right now.
They're very small.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm afraid that's a little out of my knowledge base. So you might want to check with check online or check with a garden center and see if you can get some advice that way on that. I just don't know for sure what advice to give you.
All right. Thank you, Sue, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Talking late summer in the native garden with our guest, Susan Carpenter. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Susan Carpenter of the UW-Madison Arboretum. We're talking late summer, early fall in the native garden, and hope you'll join in. The number 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Now let's take a call from Gary in Duluth, Minnesota next. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Hey, I have a question. I have a brand new septic system. So it's got a tank and then about 100-foot leach field.
Okay.
And I was hoping to put on it, there's some grass put on it, but I'd also like to add lemon mint and purple tansy. Are those okay to put on the leach field?
Again, those are not ones that I'm familiar with the plants, but I'm not familiar with their root systems. I don't think they're deep rooted. They're not native plants. So I'm not, I don't garden with them. So I'm not that familiar with them. I think with the septic fields, you really, I'm going to be looking this up because there must be a set of guidelines for that would help us think about natives on those. But I don't think those would be deep rooted. I don't think they would be a problem. Obviously, we have leach fields that are covered with pasture grasses and other plants that and are not, also not deep rooted like those.
And they're a fibrous root.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is definitely what you want for a field,
right.
For a field like that. So
right.
It may work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Marlene in Wales. Hi, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. I love your show. I have a question about ostrich ferns. Mm-hmm. These ferns have been growing in my yard up by the house for a long time. And they're spreading, and I wanted to put some out in the wooded areas of my yard. And I'm wondering if this is a good time to do that. And I also want to verify that they are a native species in this area.
Yes, they are a native species. They're one of our native ferns, and they are one of our best, most ferns most capable of spreading into new areas. I have had luck with transplanting them. I don't think the time of year is that important. You can, when it's convenient, again, you want to transplant them, make sure you've got them well watered so that they get, established. If you're putting them into a more wooded area, then you don't have to be as concerned with, them drying out as much, because obviously it's more shady and probably be more moisture there anyway. But yeah, you could just dig down around them, divide if you've, if there's a few growing close together, you can divide, a couple of them out and take that grouping and put it into your new hole. And they'll show a little bit of stress from that transplanting, but I'm sure next year you would not notice the difference, and they'll establish well.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Dan in Stein Lake, what's on your mind?
Yes, Stone Lake. I'm calling to see if there is any sort of a plant, a grass, or such that could be grown in a wooded area to provide privacy.
Mm. So how tall do you want the screening to be?
Oh, maybe like 6 feet or so.
Okay. I can't think of any grass that would be able to do that in a wooded area with, deep shade. Most of the tall native tall grasses that we have are definitely full sun, full sun species, and they would only really screen that much at like the most at this time of year. How big is the area?
Oh, maybe 30 feet.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think grass, I don't think any of the tall grasses will work in that situation of shade. You might go with, if you don't mind planting shrubs, there are probably some shrubs that would work in that situation and at least give you, even if they were deciduous shrubs, they would give you some, just a bit of screening during the winter, but they would give you a lot of screening during the summer. But yeah, I can't think of any grasses that would be good screeners in the shade.
No.
Sorry.
Sorry. Thanks for calling. Steve from Rome, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hi. My question regarding oak trees, I have several large oak trees whose bottom limbs are, to me, obviously dead, no leaves coming out, and I'm wondering if I'm able to trim those off now or do I have to wait till the freeze, and if I can trim them off, should I cover the area that's exposed with a spray, a pruning spray?
Generally, for the oaks, we like to not prune them between the beginning of April until the end of October, just to be on the safe side. The reason for that is that's the time of the span of the year where it's possible for the insects that carry the fungus that causes oak wilt to be active. So what I would recommend is kind of get close to Halloween, and the bottom limbs are just dead because they've been shaded by the upper part of the tree. I have a number of those in the native plant garden that are going to get pruned off this year too. You do not need to use any paint or wound, you know, sealant or anything like that on the cuts. Just make sure you're using clean tools for the cut. You know, sterilize your tools if between times so that you know your tools are clean, and use good cutting practices so that you don't tear away at the trunk or the bark of the tree as you're removing that limb. So you take off the, do kind of the three-step cut. So you cut off the main part of the limbs so that the weight is gone, and then you just have a little stub, and you leave the collar of the stem there so that you're not cutting flush with the trunk of the tree when you take off that last little stub. So that should do it, and I would just recommend waiting into toward the end of October to do the pruning job. It'll be a little cooler and maybe more refreshing weather to do your pruning and taking the brush or hauling the brush or whatever you're doing with the limbs when you get them cut off.
Yeah, I guess the only time we would recommend a paint is if you get a damaged tree oak during the, that April-October season. I think that's about the only time we recommend painting anymore.
It's really not recommended for the most part, yeah.
Tom in Windsor, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Another common milkweed question. Right now we have milkweed growing in the front yard. We would like to relocate it to the backyard. Should we just dig it up in a couple months, or what's the best way?
I would do that with seeds, actually. I wouldn't try to transplant it. It's rather, if you could try it and let me know how it goes. But I think that I haven't tried that to dig it up and move it, but you'll probably have pods on your plants. And if you wait until those pods are about to split, you can, open them carefully and hold the fluffy part and strip out those seeds, and they'll be dark brown. And that means they're mature and ready to go if the pod has gotten dry and kind of ready to split along its seam. And then you could plant the seeds, and I would do it that way. Put the seeds down against bare soil in the new area, and you'll have, probably more seeds than you want plants, and I'm sure some of them will germinate and, put them around in different spaces that you want milkweed growing, and pretty soon you'll probably have a whole new set of milkweeds back there.
Yep. Good advice. Tom, thank you. Vivian in Dykesville, your turn. Hi, Vivian.
Hi, good morning. Yes, we have a couple of birch trees, one in a back area, the other one near the water a little bit, and both of them are losing their leaves, as if it were fall already.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we see that. We're seeing that too. As long as it could just be a response to, the local situation that you're in. It doesn't seem like disease or anything, right? Do they?
No,
they don't.
It doesn't, really. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they're just their leaves are beginning to. There's some leaves that are beginning to fall, and that is actually the end of August is kind of the first time that you see those signs, those kinds of signs of fall. Many plants in the woods have already died back, and it's just part of the, can be part of the natural cycle. Unless you see evidence of disease or like branches dying, that kind of thing. I would consider it just to be the local, the local fall time.
Yeah, could be birch, bronze birch borer, or birch leaf miner are the two that create the biggest problems. Something worth a look too, I guess, at the leaves.
Yeah, you could look for evidence of look for evidence of another problem. But if it's just like normal leaves kind of drying and falling off, that might just be the time.
Yeah, might be just the time. Ann in Wausau wanted to suggest wild ginger for the top of the septic system.
sure. If it's shady enough and moist enough, that would be a nice ground cover. It certainly doesn't have deep roots, but it is a ground cover.
It is indeed a ground cover. I wanted to make one quick comment again. I mentioned last week on the show, I talked about my favorite zucchini recipe, or at least one of them. We called it Zubeefy, and a lot of people actually asked for the recipe. So I posted it on our blog, and just to go there, you can go to WPR.org/Larry, and in the right-hand side column, you'll see it under the photo of some zucchini. So if you want that recipe, you can take a look at it. Susan Carpenter, our guest today. Susan is the senior outreach specialist and native plant gardener at the UW-Madison Arboretum. Always a pleasure to talk with her on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Susan Carpenter, the Senior Outreach Specialist and Native Plant Gardener at the UW Arboretum. So, do you have some native plant questions or comments or maybe an experience to share? The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. And let's take a call. Carol in Onalaska, we'll go to you next. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
I have a question. I have an aspen tree that has become diseased or looks dead. Its leaves has folded in on itself. They're kind of a purplish-gray look. They're not, I can't see that there's any disease. The leaves look fine. They're not chewed on or bitten on, or I can't see anything on it. But it looks, the tree looks dead. It's probably at least 5 years old or maybe more. And I have two other aspen trees that are near that tree. And I'm just wondering what can cause that, and do I need to worry about the other two trees?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, aspen trees, were they planted separately, the three trees, or do you know?
One was planted much earlier, and then there are two other ones that were planted at the same time.
Okay. The reason I was asking about whether they were planted as separate trees is that aspen is another clonal species. So where you have one tree, then you'll have smaller ones coming off of the very shallow root system. So if the tree is dead, one thing you can do, and we've already mentioned this with some other situations that other callers have mentioned, is to send a picture of it to the plant disease diagnostic clinic here at the university, and email a picture and see if they can help you with what might have caused this. And that will help you answer your question about whether you should worry about the other trees. The reason I asked about whether they were planted separately is that if they weren't planted separately, they might be related underground, and then anything that happened in one tree might affect the other one, you know, just through that connection, through that root connection. So I would say the first step is to find out if the problem is the tree is dead. Is this, you know, what is the problem? And that would be helpful for that. And then to go from there in terms of the action you should take, like removing that tree right away, or and if you do remove the tree right away, you still might have some sprouting around it from the shallow root system that would be, you know, its offspring from its shallow roots. Again, cutting down an aspen causes those shallow roots to be stimulated to grow more aspens. So it can cause a little, you know, can cause growth around the tree that was cut, even, you know, if it's just died recently or if it's not quite dead yet, that might be the case for that.
Yeah, thanks.
That situation.
Good luck, Carol. Thank you for calling. You know, I had almost forgotten to bring up the garden tours that you folks have at the Arboretum. I did want to mention that because there's always lots going on there.
Yeah, we have so left in the season now. We've had a number of tours already, of course, but in the fall we have one more native plant garden tour on September 17th, and then in October we have two tours in the Longenecker Horticultural Gardens. So there'll be a lot of fall color. There'll be the conifer collection featured in one of those. So those are led by our curator, David Stevens, the Longenecker Horticultural Garden. And so we will be looking at those fall phenomena, whatever we see at that time, of course, within the topic of the tour. Those garden tours are free. They're on Saturdays, and they are at 1 o'clock, 1 to 3. So they're a great way to get out in the fall and learn some of the details up close with either native plants or the horticultural plants in the collection.
And you don't need to sign up for those, do you?
No, there's no registration for those. It's just a show up at the visitor center, and we'll meet you there, and off we go.
It's worth it to go to your website, too, because I know you also have a lecture series, do you not?
Right. In the fall, we have three lectures scheduled in October, and those are, again, they're free, and they are available. You don't have to sign up or anything for them. And those are the website, which everyone should be aware is a really good resource for the Arboretum, is arboretum.wisc.edu. And that also has a lot of information about our, upcoming events. It has information about our Saturday work parties that are also a drop-in, no registration required, where you can get involved in taking care of the land over here. So those are on Saturday mornings and almost every Saturday morning of the year.
Karen in Eau Claire, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Karen. Karen, are you there? Maybe we lost Karen. Let's try Dennis in New Glarus. Dennis, hello.
Yes, good afternoon.
What can we do for you?
We just moved into a house that has a red maple tree. It's about 6 years old. Either the pets or kids have stripped about a quarter of the diameter of the bark of the tree up from the ground up about 5 feet, 6 feet up the trunk of the tree. And the leaves on that side of the tree have been turning color abnormally early. Is there anything that we can do to protect that exposed section of the tree for its future growth?
Yeah, they're probably, this has been going on for a while. This didn't just happen because the leaves are already showing response. Generally, if the bark, in my experience, if the bark is damaged on a tree, there is kind of a few hours window where if you wrap it tightly and keep to keep the moisture it will heal better. But this sounds like it's been going on for a while and it's has dried out. There is still a chance that the tree could heal itself by growing bark toward the wounded area. You said it was only one quarter of the diameter. So, however, in this situation, how big is the tree right now? How tall is it?
I would say it's about 15 feet.
Yeah. One thing that's going to happen with that tree over time, let's say it does heal successfully and grows tissue around the damaged part, it is always still going to have that damage part, within it. and it might be more susceptible to disease, it might be more susceptible to insects, at, you know, as it's healing, you might consider replacing the tree. I know that sounds kind of drastic, but if it's only 6 years old and it's only 15 feet tall, I have some red maples here that were planted 20 years ago, and they were, you know, about 4 or 5 feet at their planting, and they are towering mature trees right now. So it's a fairly fast growing tree, and you might want to make sure that everybody knows about how important it is to take care of a tree and not damage its bark.
There you go, Dennis. Thank you for calling. Well, let's go to Linda in Madison. Linda, what's on your mind?
Hi.
Hello. What can we do for you?
I am wondering what native plants are good for birds and bees and butterflies. For both sun and parched shade that rabbits do not like.
Oh, boy. we have a lot of rabbits here at the Arboretum, and I do find rabbit damage at times. It seems that the more plants you have and the kind of more densely they can be planted, the better it is, because you either... You know, there's plenty of plants to fill in where the rabbits bite something. If you have plants that are very isolated from each other and the rabbits get there and they have, you know, free rein at biting that plant all the way down, then there's a lot of damage and disappointment. There are many, many plants that will be good for birds and butterflies. One thing you might want to do with that is to take a look at Pollinator Partnership, or one of the other, like the Xerces Society has some opportunities for this. You put in your zip code, so you put in our zip code here, and they would generate a list of like pollinator-friendly, wildlife-friendly plants. So that's one way to find out. And then they would have information about shade or sun, so you could get that information from those kinds of lists. And then match up the plants with your own particular site. Sometimes a little fence right away at the beginning is a good idea, because the animals like to come in. I know here we have the deer especially that come into the garden when we've just planted something, and they like to try the new things. But once the plants have been in for a little while, they don't tend to bother it anymore. So it's kind of like they are interested in novelty, and I don't know if the rabbits do that too, but they might. So a little fence just to protect it while it's getting established and getting toughened up a bit is a good option if you're using small plants. If you're using seed, there'll probably be a more dense planting to begin with anyway. And I know sometimes the rabbits run in there, but if you have more plants, you just tend to either not notice or have more recovery from, you have more things to recover from, you know, from damage by the bunnies. Yeah, I don't know that we've ever found plants that bunnies hate.
No.
So if anyone knows of plants that bunnies hate, that would be a good addition to the program today.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Bill in Cornucopia, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. Or I guess it's afternoon now. I have a question about a parcel of property I own in Central Sands area, Washera County. I'm the beneficiary of neighbors who have restored prairie, and the seeds and whatever are blowing over, and I'm getting some beautiful native prairie plants on our, it's about a 3-acre lot. The one thing that's so interesting to me, especially with the two of my favorite plants, which are the lupine and the butterfly weed, is, and I've owned the property for about 10 years now, is the dynamics of how the numbers of plants come and go. Plants come up one year giant that I never put a seed in. I've never seen a plant there before. And then I have some incredible specimens of butterfly weed. Next year, they're gone. And then they might come back 3 years later. I thought a plant was a plant. It had roots in the ground. It died back, went dormant, and came back up. But I'm not seeing that to be true at all. So I'm looking for some wisdom on that one.
Well, I think in the kind of it's true that some plants are very long lived, and some butterfly weeds they've been there for 10 or more years. They are always coming up in the same spot. I know that plant is the same plant, but in other cases we have especially in like an area where you will have some disturbance or opening of the soil within a planting, either by animals or by wind or by storms or whatever force, the plants will, of course, they're producing seeds all the time, and the seeds will move, or maybe they'll send runners over, or maybe they'll have underground stems that will be coming to an open area. But a lot of times in those open areas in sand type situation, it's seeds coming in and sort of getting established on what is then a disturbed area. And then the plants themselves may not, some plants may not be very long-lived, and certain species aren't, certainly, or certain species that could be long-lived, but they get into an area where it's not the best spot for that particular species, they may be shorter-lived in that space. An example would be the swamp milkweed. Sometimes it gets established in a pretty dry area, and on a wet year it does just fine in the dry area, and then a dry year hits. And then it doesn't survive. But in the meantime, it's probably put seeds going back into wet areas. So there's a lot of movement. And I think you've hit on something very interesting there, which is the kind of dynamic nature of native plants and of gardening with them. They can, working with them, they can be there sometimes, and then they can recover. You could have prairie plants that were suppressed by a woody, shaded by woody shrubs, and remove those shrubs, and here come the native plants again, back again, recovering. So interesting. Yeah, I'm glad you're picking up on that.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Yeah, it's one of the cool things about native plants. Thank you very much for that comment. Well, Laura in McNaughton, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I inherited a partial shade volunteer job to establish a pollinator plot in Minocqua. And I was wondering, I have a pollinator plot at my house, and I was wondering if maybe I could transplant a few of those, like the herbaceous plants, this fall, or should I just wait and put seeds down this winter? Because I do have a lot of plants that I could possibly transplant, but yeah. I didn't know if they would take or not.
Yeah, I would try some things. I would definitely do the seeding for sure, and do it in the fall so that those seeds have a chance to stratify if they need to for the over the winter, and then they would germinate next spring. If you have the time and the number of plants available, you could try transplanting some now or in the fall here in the next month or so, and then. And then you could also, it's possible that you could try in the spring. In the spring, the plants that, like, say you have plants that grow in a clump, and you could divide part of it off, a generous amount of it off, and transplant that. As the plants are just starting to come up, and they're just barely, barely coming up, that's at a time when they're really definitely wanting to grow. You could try it right then and see, some of your more vigorous, hardy plants to see if that would work well too. But that way you've kind of tried three different things, and that might help you guarantee the best success in your project.
Yeah, it's a very good advice, I think, too. Laura, thank you very much for calling. Patrick from UW Stevens Point emailed, and this has to do with septic systems, and he's got a publication to recommend. He's from UW Stevens Point. And there is a Purdue University Extension publication on septic plantings, and it is titled Landscaping Over Septic Systems with Native Plants.
Perfect.
That's perfect.
That's exactly the document I was looking for.
So if you look on, I think if you go to Purdue University Extension, or just put in Purdue University and then title Landscaping Over Septic Systems with Native Plants, I bet it's going to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will. Tim emailed that a group is trying to encourage milkweeds on their property, but having a problem because of the power line company. It came in during July and mowed everything, including its endangered purple milkweed, butterfly milkweed, lead plant. So if the monarchs had eggs on the milkweed, they're gone now and no milkweed for this summer. Do you think it'll regrow those plants? Have you worked with private landowners to help them approach power companies to leave the native vegetation while they need to clear the trees to not interfere with the power lines?
Yeah, if it's construction of the power line, I've not had any, I would not have any luck with that. If it's maintenance of a right-of-way, I think it's more possible. And there are documents similar to this septic system document that you were just talking about. There are documents about right-of-way, vegetation for right-of-ways, if the power line is already done. Of course, they don't want trees under there, but mowing of the milkweed. Now, I'm sorry to hear about the purple milkweed, because that might not, that one's a very rare one and somewhat difficult to propagate. But the butter, you know, depending on what the mowing was, if it was pretty high, I think the butterfly milkweed can come back from that, and they'll just have to see. I mean, it kind of depends on how much soil disturbance was also done. So that's the difference between just mowing an existing right-of-way or a construction of a right-of-way, which is a lot more of a disturbance, and probably the plants wouldn't, you know, make it back from that. So, yeah, I think I don't have experience personally working with a power company on that, but I'm sure there are people that do, and this would be a good, you know, I think Xerces Society might be a good place to start. I think they do have a publication about right-of-way, or possibly, you know, other agencies would have a publication about that. Maybe even DNR would have something for you.
Yeah. Jumping worms have been a problem at the Arboretum for some time now. Anything new there in our last minute?
Yes, we have. One of our staffers here, the ecologist Brad Herrick, has been working on jumping worm research. We have some good information coming out, more outreach type information for gardeners. That'll be coming out soon on our website is the place to go for that. And it also he's doing as part of his research a survey around Madison from about 5 years ago of jumping worms. So that will be resampling areas where we found them before or didn't find them, and seeing what we find this time. And he's also expanding that to some rural gardens as well. So check our website. There may be even a volunteer opportunity if people are interested in getting involved in those sampling days that are coming up this fall.
Susan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Look forward to another visit. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Susan Carpenter, Senior Outreach Specialist and Native Plant Gardener at the UW-Madison Arboretum. Great to have her with us. She'll be back. Just looking ahead, next week on Garden Talk, Doug Soldat will be along to talk with us about lawn care. And on Monday, we'll talk science with Bassam Shakashiri and then check in with our weather guys. That's Monday starting at 11. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.